Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
John Hanson in for John Williams on 720 WGN. Okay, something I like to do is call dumb questions for smart people, get different experts on the line, and I can ask questions. I ask a lot of dumb questions anyways, but I'd love for you too as well to jump in. 312-981-7200. And our expert today is Dave Bernier. He's from the Lincoln Park Zoo, the general curator. Dave, thanks for joining us here this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh, I bet you get a lot of dumb questions, but you'll say that there's no dumb questions.
You are correct on both counts.
Very good. Tell us what a general curator does.
So I kind of oversee all of animal care. We have four curators that work here, and I work with them just to make sure that everything is running smoothly, that all our needs are being met.
And you talk about in terms of the exhibit, the feeding, everything?
Yes, exactly. All the way from the diet that the animals get, all the way to the enrichment, the training, and just overall welfare for the animals here.
So I have a dumb question. Where do you guys get the animals from? That's a loaded question, but...
Yeah, the vast majority of the animals that you're going to see here and in many, many accredited zoos across the country are born in zoos. So we are part of an association, and we work with a lot of species survival plans that kind of monitor populations for good sustainability, for good genetics and demographics. And we work with them when we have exhibits that are open and available here at the zoo.
How do you determine what the exhibits look like?
So it really depends on the animals that we're trying to house here. So, for us, for a lot of our outdoor exhibits, we try and get in cold, tolerant species in order for them to be able to use their exhibit for the majority of the time, or we make modifications to exhibits to make them four-season exhibits, for our Chicago winters and sometimes for the high heat in the summer.
How much research goes into the diets that you end up feeding for the animals?
A lot of research, and some of it happens here at the zoo with our nutrition center manager or with our veterinarians. A lot of it happens, like, within the association in general, where there's a group called the Nutritional Advisory Group, and they kind of help advise zoos about appropriate diets for animals. And we also work really closely with a lot of companies that formulate animal diets for us, kind of a complete feed situation where animals can get nutrients and minerals that they need, all the different contents, whether it's a higher fat or a lower sugar, those kinds of diets in order to keep a balance and keep them healthy.
We're talking to Dave Bernier from the Lincoln Park Zoo, 312-981-7200. If you've got a dumb question for a smart person, talking about animal diets, I want to know, Dave, which animal that you guys have at the zoo is the pickiest eater?
The pickiest eater. I think... It kind of comes down to less about pickiness as opposed to, like, the niche they fill. So mm-hmm. When we have red pandas, which, in the future we're going to have red pandas again, they have a bamboo diet. They eat a lot of bamboo, and so that's something that we need to provide for them. Being a northern climate area, we don't have a lot of growing bamboo all the time, so we actually have to have it shipped into us in the colder months. And you've got to find the right species, and then there's a little bit of a palatability issue. Sometimes they like it, sometimes they don't. So we have to work pretty hard to make sure that we're feeding them not just the appropriate food, but ones that we know they'll eat.
When you come to determining maybe bringing a new animal to the zoo or whatever the case, a new species, is it like a roundtable discussion? And do we all put your favorite ideas up on the board? Or how do you come across, how do you make those decisions? I imagine they're big ones.
Yeah, they are. And each of our... curators are kind of tasked with doing a lot of that legwork. So they get in touch with what we call taxon advisory groups through AZA, our association. And that's a kind of a bigger body that looks at an entire taxon with maybe multiple species. And they make recommendations based on sustainability, which species they really feel like we should work with in order to keep those populations strong in zoos. So they start there. That's just one kind of piece of it. And then we look at the, again, we look at what animals are, could potentially be available. We look at the space that we have for the animal. We look at the weather that they can live in this area. We look at how hard their diet is to reproduce. I mean, there's, and if there's any kind of veterinary issues that we have to constantly, you know, look for, because that's a finite resource for us as well to make sure that we can care for the animals 100%. So we look at all those things and kind of balance what we feel like we can do really well and how best we can help that species.
312-981-7200, dumb questions for smart people. And let's be honest, most of your questions aren't dumb. Most of mine are. 630 wants to know, when will the big cats exhibit be completed?
So I think we are coming up on an opening for this probably in the mid-fall range. So not after Labor Day, but maybe a little bit down the road from there. And then over the summer, as you come to the zoo, you're going to start seeing kind of the finishing touches being put on it. So you'll definitely be able to notice when we're getting close, even just over the construction fence and when we're getting close to opening. But I think we're shooting for around that time, too.
Sounds good. Let's get Dusty on the line. Dusty, you got a question.
I do. I'm wondering, in the age of weird science, if there's been any serious talk or action at the zoo about, I'll say, reproducing endangered species, maybe?
I mean, breeding them or doing it in a different way?
Either breeding or cloning or anything like that?
There's definitely, we've been doing a lot of breeding for the past many decades. They have been branching out in species that have been harder to breed in zoos with artificial insemination. For some species, we've even had a few species of small cats where they've been able to transfer fertilized eggs from an endangered species into a domestic species for rearing. So there's definitely been some creative thought process on there on how we can help these critically endangered species be able to reproduce a little bit more quickly.
Boy, that's a good question. That was a smart question for a smart person. Here's what I'm wondering. The 734 also wondering the same thing, and they say it's a stupid question. Why are sometimes the animals hidden away from public, and what do the animals do when the zoo closes and everyone goes home?
Well, the first one I can tackle here is that we provide, actually, you know, purposefully, we provide spaces in our exhibits for animals to get away from view. So in the old zoo formula, we used to have, like, you know, up to 270-degree viewing, where you could basically surround an animal. And we're getting away from that, and we're putting in viewing areas so that the animals know where the public is going to be, and then they can choose to be out of view sometimes, maybe from one viewing angle but not another, in order to provide them some privacy. And we call that choice of control over their environment. And that kind of choice and control makes them more comfortable and provides better welfare for them.
And what do they do when we leave?
Yeah. So the second part, I worked nights for many years as an animal keeper. And so I know that there are some cats that are, you know, crepuscular, that are kind of active at dawn and dusk. So you'll see a lot of activity, you know, near the end of the day after the zoo closes, because that's just their normal time to be active. But in general, I think most of the animals that we have here that are diurnal, they're asleep. And if you go to our Regenstein Center for African Apes, our chimpanzees, they start to bed down in gorillas. They start getting ready for bed about 4:30, and they're asleep. And they're that way until the morning, so.
Well, going on that, what's interesting, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Dave, but here in Chicago, obviously, we have a vast difference from spring or from winter to summer of our sunrises and sudden set times. I imagine some of the animals that live near the equator, does that take some adjustment for them?
Yeah, for some species, I think lighting is really critical. Avian species in particular, it's very critical. Some reptile species and even some mammal species. But a lot of the animals that we have here have were born and grown up in this northern light cycle. So they're not so much that they're used to something different because they never really experienced an equatorial light cycle. If they've got access to, like, outdoor areas, we definitely have some species that if we want to keep lights on them for a 12-hour period, you know, 12 and 12, light and dark, we can do that artificially. But when it comes to the sunlight, I think they adjust.
Okay, let's go to Dave for Dave. What's your question, Dave?
The question was your opinion regards to the transfer of the virus of COVID to human species.
I only know what's been reported, and as far as I know, There have been animals in zoos that have gotten COVID-19 from people, suspectedly from people, but not the other way around. And so I think that there is, I'm not even sure that they really know if it was directly from bats or animals to humans that started this thing off, but I know that from once we've been tracking it, it hasn't gone the other way. It's only gone from people to animals.
Tell you what, Dave, I'll make sure to stay 6 feet away no matter what. That will probably help.
Great rule.
Right. Dave, I'm going to put you on hold. I hope that's okay. We got to take a quick break, and then I got some questions about the zoo in general, okay?
Sure.
All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Get your questions in, 312-981-7200. Dumb questions for smart people. Anything you've ever wanted to know about how to run a zoo, what happens to the animals, animal-specific questions, we've got an expert on to answer that. 312 wants to know, what's the future of the farm at the zoo?
Well, right now, the future is that it's not going to be open while we're in our restriction level with the city and the county. But we've kind of transitioned away from the idea of kind of educating people about the food and where they get it from, and we're making it more geared towards really young age groups. We've got our chicken exhibit, and we've got our Feed the Cows that we'll do. We have our goat contact area. We can do some goat grooming. So we really want to get that opening. We know it's a real favorite of the zoo, so we don't see any major changes there with the species. But the educational programs are a little bit more geared towards the really younger kids.
Okay. This is an interesting question. 630. So the free zoo like Lincoln Park, is it government funded? How do you stay afloat? How does it work? Is it all volunteers? What's the setup there?
Yeah, no, we privatized in 1995 from the Park District, so we get very little money from the Park District for our operating budget every year. Our operating budget, kind of comes out of earned revenue, which is like parking and food and attractions and those kinds of things. And then we get tremendous support from our members, our donors, to be able to keep us free. I mean, all those folks are really committed to keeping the zoo free as we are, which really helps. We've got a very loyal group. So even though we do earn a lot of our revenue, we do get a lot of support as well.
414 wants to know, do the bears hibernate during winter months, either at your zoo or other zoos?
It depends on the zoo. Here at Lincoln Park, our black bears that we have, they go through kind of a bit of a hibernation. It's not a true hibernation because we are feeding them during the winter, and even though they're eating a small amount of food, they're still kind of awake. So, and I think it really depends on what your management strategy is for us. The polar bears, they don't hibernate, so they're active all winter except for the female when she's in her den from October to December. So it depends on how you want to manage those in zoos.
312 wants to know, in the time that you've worked at the zoo, how much different is Lincoln Park Zoo and zoos in general? I guess that's a great question. I mean, I think the focus of a lot of zoos has changed and ebbed and flowed over the years. Your answer to that?
Yeah, I've been here at Lincoln Park for 32 years, and I can tell you from my very start of my career, the zoo has been engaging in renovating exhibits and making exhibits better homes for animals. So whether it's more space or more complexity, looking at the requirements for the species like heat and cooling and shade. So I think the zoos have been going from these larger exhibit, menagerie collections to more focused groups of animals, working with the SSP, the Species Survival Plans, on sustainable populations of animals. So there's been a lot of science applied here, and also a lot of welfare is coming into the forefront now when we start looking at animal homes and how we care for them is providing good welfare for them as well.
847 wants to know, how do you keep the animals happy since they're probably used to more or would be used to to more open space?
Most of our zoo animals, as I said at the very beginning, they're have all been zoo housed their whole lives. And so what we try to do is, even though they haven't experienced a lot of space, we know that maybe their natural history definitely provides for more space than we have. We try making the exhibit as complex as we can so that they're not just using the ground area, but also the full volume of the space. And we try to give them choices in the exhibits where an area could be cooler or warmer, shaded or unshaded, a wet area, things that they would normally do from their natural history. So we try to give them the best homes based on what they would be, their behaviors would be in the wild.
Interesting. What's your favorite animal at the zoo?
That's a real tough question. That's the reason why I'm a general curator, is I like animals generally, right?
Uh-huh.
So I think I've got a gorilla right now that I worked with a couple different times many years ago. Her name is Raleigh at our Record Science Center for African Apes. And her and I still have a pretty good connection. So I'd have to say it's Raleigh, girl.
Oh, I'm glad. You're like a parent where you're like, oh, you can't make a choice. But then if you really push them on it, they will definitely
right.
come up with an answer. Let's go to Linda. Linda's got an interesting question. Good morning, Linda.
Well, good morning, and hope you all have a beautiful week. But I heard on the radio the other night that grizzly bears and polar bears are now mating, and they're calling them pizzlies.
Pizzlies? Have you heard anything about this, Dave?
You know, just personally, I think I heard about this. I don't have a lot of information about it, unfortunately. But when species start to expand their ranges, especially based on resources, where they haven't been before, you know, this is potentially where some hybridization could happen.
Interesting. Linda, thanks for the phone call. That's interesting stuff. I imagine, Dave, and that leads me to my next question, that as the climate continues to change and we learn more about that, that you might see more of what Linda was talking about, or just in general, we need to refocus entirely on the care for our planet and how that affects many of the animals that you have at the zoo.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing now with a lot of the global warming trends is an acceleration of what might happen over thousands of years as animals' ranges change. And so there's a lot of pressure being put on animals like polar bears to try to find different food sources because their ice isn't available when they need to be available to eat. So, as impressive and strong and powerful as an apex predator, the polar bears, they're actually very fragile considering how reliant they are on sea ice in order to really survive and be healthy.
847 wants to know how you got into this sort of field. Were you inspired by a zoo, or did you always like animals?
Yeah, I grew up on the northwest side of Chicago, and Lincoln Park Zoo was the zoo I went to because I could take the bus down here when I had the chance, and my parents would take me here. My parents were extremely supportive of me, and I had every kind of animal you can imagine in my northwest side home, snakes and lizards and turtles and birds and ferrets, and I've just always kind of gravitated towards them and wanted to care for them. And I think that's how I got my start.
I imagine a lot of people, like there's been discussions about zoos' place in the world today. That's an ongoing discussion. I imagine no one is more acute to the needs of animals than people like you and your care for them, of course. And people like you who got inspired to love animals based on going to a zoo. I imagine that that's something you guys take as precious, training or at least inspiring future generations to care about animals.
Exactly. We really want to be able to reach as many people as possible, not just through our just by being here, which I think is great, but through our programs, even our internship programs. We want to get people into the zoo so they can start understanding what a career in zoos is like so that they can see if that's a viable option for them going forward. You know, we need more and more people to care about animals, not just what happens here in zoos, but also what happens to them in the wild and the things that we can do to help, create safe spaces for them in the world.
Dave, I don't know if this is your area of expertise, so you can demur, but we got a question from Jim, and that's the name of the segment. Jim, what's your question?
I understand that polar bears evolved from the grizzly bear, and I wondered if that was right.
Dave, any idea on that one?
Yeah, I have to take a pass on that one. That I'm not sure about.
Tell you what, Jim, I don't know either, and I would speculate wildly. I'll look it up later. I'll try and get you an answer. If any bear experts out there want to chime on in, 312-981-7200. We're going to check your credentials. Thanks so much, Jim. Dave, before we wrap on up, just a question. The zoo, I know it was closed for a couple months to start this season. Where are we at now? Is it open? What's the capacity? Can people come on in? What are you looking at?
We're still at a lower capacity, and even though the zoo is free, we do require reservations to be made, which they can be made through our website, lpzoo.org. Every year, I think twice a week, Thursdays and Sunday afternoons, we release blocks of times that people can register for their tickets, for their free tickets, and then come to the zoo and enjoy. Once they get in, they can spend as much time as they want inside the zoo. We've got several buildings that are open now, which is new for us. We've only started that in the last month and a half or so. So we're not sure exactly which buildings will be open. We can't make any promises, but we will have a couple of indoor areas open for people to see, which they haven't been able to do for about a year.
That's great. Dave, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.